2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bennis with you this morning. We are taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Next person says, help. They successfully bought a home in Eagle Mountain, and they've traded Riverton lakebed clay for sand. And their main question is how to care for a Jostaberry and when to plant it. It's outside in a pot, and a recommendation on a fast-growing shade tree for the area. There you go. Two questions.
So the Jostaberry, just for our listeners' general knowledge.
What is a Jostaberry?
It is a hybrid between a currant and a gooseberry.
Oh.
So they're thornless.
Okay.
So gooseberries have bigger fruit, but you will get torn up trying to pick them.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad used to grow these, and I'm the one that ended up having to pick them because I was the kid getting punished.
Oh,
not really, but I did end up picking those things.
Are you a troublemaker?
No, me.
You just love the plants.
Yes. And so the currant is a closely related species, but the berries are a lot smaller and in clusters, but there's no thorns. And so they were hybridized, and this Jostaberry has larger fruit in smaller clusters mm-hmm. with no thorns. So just a roundabout way to explain what they are, they're pretty tough plants, and as long as they keep the plant watered, it should do fine. We grew them in sand up in North Davis County, and they actually are quite shade tolerant, and they did fairly well. We ended up tearing the gooseberries out because nobody ate them, but it's just one of those things that we could figure out what to do with it, but it was just, my mom figured it was kind of a pain. So at any rate, that's what they are. And I think if you tried to pronounce that correctly, it was a European hybrid, and it's Jostaberry. Yeah, Josta.
Okay. Sorry.
So no, I Jostaberry is what I call them usually. I'm not that fancy.
Okay.
So that's what I would do with that. And then a fast-growing shade tree.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want, the faster you're growing the tree, the worse it's going to be down the road.
Oh.
So willows and cottonwoods are the fastest growing, and they're usually the $30 tree that costs $3,000 to remove.
Mm-hmm.
So for something that is going to be tolerant, if you run into some of the salty soils and irrigation water out that way, I would look at a white oak. Little slower but reliable tree. Hackberry would be another one that they could look at. That one has a moderate growth rate of at least a couple of feet a year, or a hybrid elm. Hybrid elms will go a couple of feet a year. And even though we have evil elms that grow in our yard, these are
evil
a cousin
elms.
That is much better behaved. Hmm. The evil elms that we have are not really evil. They're just plants are plants. But they're Siberian elms, and they're the ones that seed all over the place, grow up by your foundation,
oh, those
and
are
flower
evil.
Beds.
Sorry, you're right.
That Siberian elm. And the other elms, yeah, are the going to be the ones like the Emerald Sunshine, Prospect, or Frontier. There's many good elms out there that we should be growing more.
Hmm. Next listener says they wanted to pick their almonds today because they're ready. The holes have split, but it's raining, and they've heard that you shouldn't let them get wet before you pick them. So what is the best thing for them to do since they're wet?
So what's the question again?
They want to pick their almonds.
If they're ready, pick them and just dry them.
Does it matter if they're wet?
No. It doesn't. I mean, if the little fruit has opened up and they're ready to be harvested, just pull them and put them in the garage or something where it's dry and let them dry down, and they'll be fine.
Okay. Yay. Solved one problem today. I love it when we can actually solve a problem.
We do. And so our phone lines.
The next one we're not going to be able to solve.
Yeah, the phone lines are empty right now. And so, folks, you're going to call and you're going to like it.
Yeah, you're not going to have to wait for a long time.
That better, Dave?
Yeah, that number 801-575-8255. We have lots of questions, though. Our next listener says they live in Alpine. They have necrotic ring spot all over their lawn. Is it too late to start treating for that, or should they wait till spring?
No, it's not too late, you know, but you've got to look at the overall strategy with it. People just want, and we're getting away from it a little bit, which is good, but people traditionally call in and say, what fungicide do I put down to kill it? And it's just a lot more complicated because the necrotic ring spot oftentimes gets started in lawns that are compacted or heavy clay, and there's a lot of thatch.
Mm-hmm.
And so the long-term solution is to make sure that your soil is well aerated, then you're watering correctly. This year has been a little hard. I realize it's a drought. And then fungicide in the spring when we're consistently around 70 degrees. So that early to mid-May, right when we're 60 to 75 every day, the fungus in the soil is on the outside of the roots, and that's the best opportunity you have with the fungicide to go after it, because after that it goes inside the roots and it's much harder to control. But if you've had necrotic ring spot, you've remedied soil compaction or made sure you don't have it, make sure you don't have a lot of thatch, you may still end up top dressing the problem areas that have necrotic ring spot with resistant grass varieties. And there's Kentucky bluegrass varieties and fescue and rye varieties that are all resistant, sometimes immune to it. But if you've had it for 2 or 3 years, that's oftentimes what you end up doing is just reseeding those areas with resistant grasses.
Right. With the drought this year, we've had a couple of different kinds of weeds kind of try to take over in our lawn. One is kind of that burgundy color that looks kind of like a clover, but it's burgundy. And the other looks like clover that has the little yellow flowers. Would it be best to try to treat those now, or what would you suggest?
Well, the yellow flowered clover is probably black medic. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people mistake what we'd call wood sorrel or oxalis, but it is a good time of year to start spraying. And we've talked a little bit about quinclorac. That would be something that could be used.
Or I have another, that on my shelf.
Yeah, good lawn weed killer, because it's cooling down, and if it's consistently below 85, those perennial plants are drawing those nutrients down into the roots.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other trick to this, besides thickening up the lawn, is going to be putting down a pre-emergent in the spring that will go after black medic and, say, spurge and oxalis. And so you're going to want to use Bayer makes a particular product. It used to the company formerly known as Bayer, I believe it's BioAdvanced now, makes a product called Season Long Lawn Weed Control, which is a combination dandelion killer with pre-emergent in it that is specifically, I won't say it's designed, but very effective against many broadleafed weeds. And so if you have those problems, that's something you can do. Now, if it's traditional Dutch white clover, I don't necessarily consider that bad in a lawn because it supports pollinator populations.
Ah.
So if people are allergic to bees, that's one reason you might want to get rid of it. But if it's everywhere in your lawn, it's a sign that the lawn doesn't have enough nitrogen. And because that Dutch white clover, clovers will fix their own nitrogen from the atmosphere, you know, through the roots, you learn in junior high science about the rhizobium and all the nodules and things. The clover has an opportunity to go crazy in lawns that aren't fertilized very often. And so I'm not encouraging anybody to over-fertilize, but if you'll fertilize spring and fall, that will keep enough nitrogen on the lawn that it will compete against that clover. Now, if you do need to get rid of it because it is everywhere, I be cautious, but a quinclorac product or something like Speed Zone or Weed Free Zone will go after it.
All right. Be consistent with your fertilization.
Just be consistent.
Got it. Our phone callers are lining up. We're going to take a break, come back with your calls. Again, the number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Thank you for spending this Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria and Ton with you this morning. We asked for callers. Now we have callers, Ton. Let's go right to the phone lines. Troy is in Provo. And Troy, what is your question this morning?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, sorry. So really weird. So in our flower beds, we have a lot of bulb type things like grape hyacinths and other kind of things like that. And we've had them for years, and we know every year they come up in the spring and then die back, and then they're gone. So this year, like about a month or so ago, I put about 3 inches of bark into all of our flower beds, and all of the bulbs have re-came up again. Is that because of the bark, and do you think it's going to be a problem for next year?
That's the first time I've heard of. I mean, all you can do at this point is let the plants do their thing. And hopefully the bark will be enough to keep them going. Because if they get snow cover, I think they'll be all right. The worst case scenario would be if we had a cold, dry winter and those leaves are up, they would have a lot stronger chance of desiccating and maybe killing them out. And so at this point, don't cut them back. Just let them do their thing, you know, be a little frugal on the water and see if you can get, hopefully we get snow cover, but hopefully with that compost or mulch you put in there, there's enough there to keep them over the winter.
Okay. Well, and frankly, the grape hyacinths are like a weed anyway. We dig them out every year and there's just enough of them to come up and be beautiful. So
yeah.
If some of them don't make it, it'll be fine.
Well, not a crime. So, there's probably enough seed in the soil that even if all of the current plants were killed back, they would be back within a year or two anyway. So,
okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call. Let's go right to the next caller, and that is Taylor, I think in West Valley. Good morning, Taylor. What is your question?
Hi, I'm in West Haven, actually.
Thank you. Sorry. They just said West, and I just took a guess there.
You're good. No worries. I have a grapevine that had been doing really, really well, and as the grapes just started to turn purple, the whole vine, and it's massive, died. And there's tons of little teeny tiny bugs that when you walk by, it sounds like it's almost raining. What are they, and how do I kill them?
You most likely have grape leaf hopper, and there's going to be a number of different sprays labeled for them, and they probably should have been sprayed a month or 6 weeks ago. But if you wanted to now, it still reduce the population. So what you would do is look for a good garden spray, you know, Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew or something from like BioAdvanced or Ortho that just says, you know, garden insecticide. A lot of those are actually becoming a lot more reduced risk, but you may need to apply a couple of times a week apart. But I would go ahead and do that if the population's built that much.
Oh, it's insane. And it was over, excuse me, it was almost like overnight. So,
yeah,
and you call that grape
weather.
Leaf hedgehopper?
Yeah, grape leaf hopper.
Grape leaf hopper, okay. All right. That's what I needed to know. I'll
Perfect.
Go get them. Thank you.
Thanks for your call this morning. Next listener wants to know, is it too late to treat for grubs?
Yeah, it pretty much is. If it's Kentucky bluegrass billbug, if you do some monitoring, you can dig through the soil a little bit in the grass and find the adults. You need to know what the adults look like. And you can do some late summer, early fall spraying for the adults to try to reduce the population because they overwinter as adults and then lay eggs in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, yeah, it's too late. And, you know, they also, if it's sod webworm, if they see moss flying up when they walk in the damaged areas, then it's not too late to treat for those. But you really need to know what you're going after.
Joy in Midvale wants to know, she has a couple of tall rows of Sharon, not too many blossoms. Should she cut them now for next spring so they can blossom more?
No, it's we are getting to the point that we need to have an intervention on the pruners.
Almost there, right?
Yeah, almost there. Just leave them alone. If you wanted to just walk around them with a pruner snapping them, you could try that, but wait for mid-March.
All right. And the number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Remember, KSL's pregame coverage of BYU Arizona State starts at 6. It's brought to you by UCCU. Love where you bank. We'll be back following the top of the hour news.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.